Welcome to Conversations at the Cowgirl. I'm Dr. Diana Vella, and we're pleased to present this bonus episode with Camilla Napruse, horse master and honoree in the National Cowgirl Museum. Camilla was stateside last fall, and I took the opportunity to talk with her about her career, her passions, and the hardest thing to get a horse to do when filming. We hope you enjoy this conversation at the Cowgirl. Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Diana Vella, and I'm your host for today's podcast with Camilla Napruse. Camilla was inducted in 2018, is a horse master, and runs the Devil's Horseman, the family-owned company that provides horses, carriages, tack, riders, choreography, wranglers, groomers, you name it, to international films, television programs, and photo shoots. Their horses have graced the pages of Vogue, Vanity Fair, and W Magazine, to name a few. The company is often overseeing up to 7 film productions at a time with world-renowned production companies, including Disney, Warner Brothers, Universal Pictures, HBO, Netflix, Fox Broadcasting, and Working Title Films. From major motion pictures such as Wonder Woman to the addictive acclaimed series such as Game of Thrones, The Crown, and Peaky Blinders. Camilla, welcome to Conversations at the Cowgirl.
Oh, thank you, Diana. That was a strong entrance.
Thank you. Camilla, horsemaster is an unusual title for us in the United States, and that's certainly how we refer to you here at the museum. How would you best translate that title to a U.S. audience?
It's interesting. I think my job as a horsemaster is to oversee everything that is based around the horse on a film set. So it's, you know, obviously, we can break it down how a production will start. So first of all, I will be sent a treatment or a script. I'll read through it. I'll look at what's possible, what's not possible. And from there, then I'll start to get together with the creatives. So first of all, it might be the director and the production designer. I will, he or she will present their thoughts or views or how they see something. Because something sometimes on paper might not be how it might be visually represented later. Mm-hmm. So we'll get together, we'll work on the sequences, what might be required. And then also while we're doing that, we'll work with the producers as well and how we kind of form everything together, if it be budgets, horses, requirements, what we're going to need. I mean, we have a production starting up in January. We just started preparation now. We have 80 horses on for... how long is it going to be? 4 to 5 months. We're going to shoot this. So it's everything that comes with it. If you need to put, you know, stabling, rehearsal time, how we find the riders, how we work together, how we're going to create these sequences, the battles. There's so much, I think, about the film. I think same as anything in life. If you want to do something, everything is done in the preparation. Now, it's a bit like baking a cake. If you have all the ingredients and the ingredients are there, in theory, when we put it in the oven, it's going to go swimmingly, and that's where we're heading for. So I think that's where we kind of progress, I think, as a company, is there's so much that goes into our preparation. And the other thing is how we evaluate risk. That's one of the biggest things, I think, that's coming up and should come up. Like how depending on what it is, if it's an actor riding for a long time, how are we going to make it safe? I think that comes into play a lot. So there's just many, many variables. And of course, you know, we have a wonderful team that work with us. We have people that literally take care of the horse's care. We have people training the horses. We have people dealing with all of the costumes of the horses that they wear and looking after that. You have transport. I mean, there's just so many layers, I think, that people watch it on screen and they just, and I've had this conversation with lots of people since I've, you know, getting to know them and meeting them, that you just watch it, but you have no idea what goes on to be able to get to this point. So I think as a horse master, it's overseeing everything that comes with it. And understanding the history too, that's another big part of it. Understanding what happened in Roman times, Egyptian times, medieval times, Victorian times. As time moved on, things progressed with the horses and having the knowledge of it.
You said you are sent a treatment. So for our listeners who are not in cinema or TV, is a treatment a script?
So a treatment can be many things. So first of all, yes, it could be a script. If it's a TV series, it potentially might be an outline. So you'll have an outline or a breakdown of an episode. So you might literally have one A4 page, a breakdown of episode one, episode two. So the good thing about an outline is they can send an outline in advance while they're working on the scripts. And then all of the HODs, which are obviously heads of departments of the film, if it be production, makeup, costume, horses, stunts, we can all start getting together and working on potential scenarios, how much it's going to cost, how long it's going to take to shoot. And then from there, obviously, then they have to break down, do their scripts and then break down their schedules. You know, we have a whole, like a good one to do is like Battle of the Bastards and Game of Thrones. The outline comes a year in advance. The scripts might come 6 months later. And then after the scripts will break down, okay, how long is it going to take? Is this a 5-day shoot? Is this 10 days? Is this 15 days? Mm-hmm. So all of that has to come in and everybody needs to come in with all of their information and how, I mean, that's the best part about the film industry too, how we're all going to collaborate. There's no I in the film industry. And I think anyone that does think they're an I is very foolish. It's a team. It's purely teamwork.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up Battle of the Bastards. So for the listeners, as Camilla said, this was an episode in Game of Thrones. And using that as an example, horses are central to the action. And, you know, I'd almost argue serves as kind of like their own character. But that work that's done doesn't receive the level of publicity or acclaim that the actors, for example, might. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So currently, we're not eligible for any awards, which is... it's okay. Well, you know, you get used to it. You get to learn to live with it. Other departments are, i.e. if it would be production or if it be stunts, yes, they are eligible. But currently, because we don't, you know, there's not that many of us, horse department isn't eligible for anything. Actually, probably the only thing that's been, it's the Hall of Fame. That's the only thing that I've received so far in my career as an outstanding achievement, which is amazing. Thank you very much for giving that to me. But until then, nothing. I mean, do you think with Game of Thrones, I'm very good friends with the two showrunners and they supported me all the way. And during press, when it came out, they did give a lot of back to me back in the press, which is really nice. Cause usually you don't, you know, we fall back into the shadows very fast. And like I said before, you watch it, you don't really appreciate it, but you're right. Something like Battle of the Bastards. And there is many different sequences we've done over our, you know, career as a Devil's Horseman, that without the horses, these sequences wouldn't work. I mean, there's such a poetic feel that the horses bring to Battle of the Bastards that if you took those four-legged creatures out, it wouldn't be the same.
Oh, absolutely. Is anyone working to change that in the industry?
Nope, not currently. I think, you know, there is other arguments and there's other departments which are pushing forward. I mean, if you follow like the stunts at the moment, stunts are really trying to push to get an Oscar, potential Oscar nomination. But that, you know, fight's been going on for probably 20 years. Who knows what happens on that side? So I do think, we're a way off or maybe it'll never happen.
Mm. Are you okay with being in the background, with your industry being in the...
I don't think we really have a choice, to be honest. That's the honest answer. I don't really think that there is a choice to be able to request that. I mean, at the moment, as long as my creatives are happy, that makes me happy. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's about working with these teams. And, you know, if we all work together and we see it on the big screen, and that's all I can kind of take from it for now.
Mm. What aspect of what you do you enjoy the most?
I don't know, actually. It's interesting you should say that. I think time changes a lot and you get different joys from different levels. I'm 35 now. I started doing this when I was 14. So it's, everyone thinks that I'm young, but I've been in it for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, at the start, I had like a different journey. When I was young, I wanted our company to really progress because we were very much the underdog in the world. And I fought and I pushed as hard as I could to be able to take us to where we are today. I worked very closely. I really enjoy working closely with the actors that come through our premises. I think I get an enjoyment of giving a gift, because if you learn to ride a horse, it really is a gift, because it's like a bicycle. You can pick it up at any point. And I think there's something lovely about being able to give your knowledge and your passion to another and them understand it on the same level. So I think I definitely get something from that. And the other thing is I get a lot from my team. I think, you know, I've a lot of the team which are now at the top of our company, we've grown up with since we were kids. So a lot of us are second generation. We're all very similar age. I think there's something really lovely about seeing how they progressed as well. Mm-hmm. And how they're moving to the next point. And you can see their kids coming on. So, you know, even if I'm having a bad day, as long as everyone around me is happy and smiling, I think that means a lot to me as a person.
You just talked about it being a gift, seeing teaching people how to ride. How do you match an actor and a horse?
That's interesting. So, I mean, depending on the actor, I mean, some actors I will meet for 2 hours or maybe even an hour, and next week we're shooting for the next couple of months. There's a strong possibility. Other actors I'll meet 6 months in advance and they'll really put a lot of homework into it. I mean, it all depends on their schedules and how much commitment they want to put into it as a person. And that's their choice at the end of the day. As soon as I meet them, I'm like, it's your choice how much you want to do, how much you, maybe you can, maybe they might be shooting something else. They might actually not be available. But first of all, usually I start with a cup of tea. I meet them. We have a quick cup of tea, 15 minutes. I try to understand them, see who this person is. And then from there, I think very much like horses have personalities as much as people have personalities. I think horses have taught me so much and for my future of how to deal with people. I would definitely not be the person I am today or the person that's in this industry without them. They have made me and taken me to another level. I mean, the great thing about the horses, you can't have a conversation with words. It has to be through body language, how you present yourself and how you understand that. So by taking some of those skills and putting them with meeting whichever actors are in, everything starts to come together and it starts to become this interesting, like three-way relationship with it's me and them and their horse and how you gain their trust and how we move forward. Because, you know, it's scary. Some people come and, you know, I've had people come in the, you know, in their 70s and they've never ridden a horse before. And, you know, some people have major fears of them and how we're going to work through that. But so far, touch wood, I've never had a failure yet.
Do you have people who enjoy it so much they continue to ride long after?
Yes, I have many actors that come back and want to use the same horses. And we've built, like I was saying before, you build such a rapport and relationship with them. And I get it. I would probably feel the same if I learned a new skill. Let's say I learned the piano. I'd want to go back to the same teacher. I'd want to stick with that continuity because you feel safe. And if you click, you click. It's perfect. It becomes like a friendship too, which is nice. You know, some people I do stay good friends with. And, you know, those friendships will be there forever. Because the other thing is we live in this very strange world where everything is fast track. So you spend 3 months, but you spend, you know, sometimes that you might spend 6 hours a day, or if you're on a movie, we're there together 12 hours a day. So these relationships which in the normal world, which might take, you know, 3 to 4 years to come together within the 6 months. It's fascinating.
Have you run across people who you just can't teach them to ride? It's just not going to work.
Never, not yet. Yeah, thankfully I haven't, that hasn't happened yet. I'm sure it probably will happen one day. I mean, we can't get on with everyone, can we? That's impossible.
What's the most difficult job to pull off involving a horse?
I don't think there's a generic answer to that because each job comes with different variables. It might become with a difficult creative that we're working with, someone that might ask too much. It might come with a schedule, which is there's too much to shoot in a day. You know, I do feel like overall, sometimes the simplest of things in life catch you out. Because the complicated things, you do so much homework towards. You spend months and months in conversations and in rehearsals. We study everything. And I think any time that you do, for me, and I think my team would agree with me, it's always the simple things that catch you out. But that's life.
Mm-hmm. Give me an example of a simple thing.
A simple thing. I don't know, like something pathetic, like a horse tied to a tree that's meant to be static. Well, there's like, you know, there's a very intense love scene and a big 6 pages of dialogue happening behind you. And the horse is doing a circle around a tree and climbing up the tree. And you're going, can we just stand still? Because, you know, these actors haven't got that many takes in them because this is complicated. Yeah, it really is that basic.
If you like this podcast, consider giving to the mission of the National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame to preserve and tell the story of the cowgirl through artifacts, research, education, and the Hall of Fame. Visit cowgirl.net to donate and find out more information.
So the Devil's Horseman is one of the, if not the, largest supplier in the world for horses and tack and carriages for obviously film, movies, entertainment. You told FEI TV, for our listeners, that's the International Federation of Equine Sports, that you have at Wychwood Stud, which is located a little outside London, over 2,000 saddles, 4 tack rooms. You have your own leather shop, metal shop. I've been there, so I know it's a large collection, but I also know that doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in 10 years. Tell me about how the business started.
So my father created the business back in the 70s, and he isn't actually from England. He's from France. And his father was a mechanic, and he decided from a very young age he had an affinity with horses. And he used to go and break into the local farmer's field and jump on the horse's bareback, and he found a love and passion for it. Anyhow, at a young age, I think he's about 18 at this point, he goes off to Paris, and there's a very famous nightclub called the Lido. It's a bit similar to the Moulin Rouge, if anyone knows that. And they used to, back in the 70s, they joust horses on stage. It was an interesting time. And he got a job doing that. And then from there, they got spotted to be able to invite, they got invited to come to England to be able to do the same show. So he took the chance, and he came over on a boat with a saddle and a bridle, no horses, nothing. And then decided, you know, to stay from there. So it really is, it starts with nothing, and it's kind of grown to this point. But, you know, it's taken it's taken a lot of time and different scenarios to be able to go through to kind of start. And obviously, you know, me and my brother came along, Daniel, and how we make a transition from, you know, where starting with live shows and transitioning into the film industry, being able to, you know, build our collection. I mean, I do think our collection now is one of the, I think it is the biggest in the world, especially carriages. I don't think anyone kind of comes closely. I also think at the moment we're doing between 25 to 30 productions a year. I don't know any other companies in the world which are supplying the amount of productions that we are supplying to. So it really is, it's a family story as well, which also, you know, is quite complicated. I think, you know, if people are listening and are in a family business, there is complications that come with that. There is positives, there is negatives. But I think, you know, you have to work through it, and you have to find how the dynamics and everything are going to work and come together.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your brother, Daniel. Can you talk about how y'all share duties?
Yes. So me and Dan's 10 years older than me. We work very closely. I think I'll always be a person as well. I like to bounce off someone. I don't like to do something on my own. I think it's lovely having a partner in the company, because you can be very honest with each other. You can tell, you know, sometimes it might take that extra person to tell you if you're right or wrong. We can bounce ideas off each other. I think we do that a lot. If something comes in, you know, we'll read something and we'll both come together. And if we don't like something the other one's come up with, we'll say, actually, that's a bit rubbish. Like, I don't know, you know. Or we'll find something which is great. Our relationship's really wonderful. I mean, I think we talk to each other every single day of the week. And we're as close as friends as we are running the company together. And, you know, even with our father, Gerard, as well, it's, you know, the three of us, as we get older, I think we've become closer and closer, which is really nice. And I think I'd kind of, looking back now, I think it's nicer to be closer when you're older than closer when you're younger, because this is going to last, you know, forever, these relationships. And it's taken time to everyone to kind of like find their different places and mm-hmm. how everything fits together like a jigsaw. Mm-hmm.
I read you started in the business at age 8, but then I think you just mentioned you started at 14. Can you help me with this timeline?
No, you're right. At eight, I started doing all of the tricks like Roman riding. I was performing at 8 years old, which now actually we were talking about it. We were having a conversation yesterday about it. Me and my brother were like, it was kind of crazy, but I mean, it was our history. And would you do the same thing again if we had kids? And, you know, it's a complicated conversation to have. So at 8, I started. At 14, I don't think, by the way, anyone listening, I wouldn't advise this at all. I dropped out of school. And from that choice, my parents said to me, that's fine if you're going to, but then you're going to have to go straight into work. So at 14, I found myself on a lorry driving to Luxembourg, starting as a groom, you know, mucking out stalls, tacking up horses. I remember it was a miserable 6 months. It was me and another groom, Simone. And I don't think I've ever worked that hard in my life. My God, we were working 18-hour days, 20 horses in the mud, mucking out. Yeah, that was an experience. But I think that's another thing that kind of adds to it. You know, me and Dan, we very much started at the bottom of the company. We've done every job there is to do in the company. It's not like, you know, some businesses that I look at, people, you know, they come in the mid-end, they come in at the top end, especially if it's second generation or third generation, where I do think we get the respect in our company that we see everybody's sides of the story because we've been there and done it ourselves. And I think you should do that. If you really want to be a good leader, that's the way to be able to have people's respect and understand what, if people are having a good day, bad day, what it's all about and how you relate to it.
Mm-hmm. So one of our honorees, Sandra Day O'Connor, she was the first female justice of the Supreme Court. She's talked about when she first went to the court, there was no bathroom near the court for her because it had been a male bastion for like 200 years, you know, and about how she was joining a boys' club. But because she had been raised on a ranch, her babysitters were sometimes the cowboys in the bunkhouse, being the only female was something she was used to. Does that compare at all to the work that you do?
I think so. I think when I was younger, it was extremely male dominated. And I'm very lucky again, because I've come later to this, but I know, you know, women that I've spoken to the industry, which, you know, double my age, they obviously they came across it a lot harder, and they're the first women that really start to open the doors. But I was definitely, when I was younger, it was a lot more male dominated. Then now we have, I think we have a lot of equality within the film industry, and we're definitely, I feel like even if you're reading the press and everything, it feels like we're one of the leading industries that are bringing equality to the table, which I'm very proud to be a part of and be present of. I mean, especially within my company, it's very much 50-50. And I think including diversity as well, I'm really trying to like change and how we bring together and educate people and help people be able to open up spots within our company. So it's not just a closed shop to a certain, you know, a group. I don't want to have minority groups. I want to have everything. I just want to have a space when, you know, you're really good. I don't care where your background is or where you come from. I want to be able to open up these opportunities to everybody.
Mm-hmm. You get very passionate and invested when you start to talk about issues of justice and fairness, and it's just really important to you. And I wonder where that comes from.
Interesting. I think I found it hard at the start. Yeah, I think, going back to that dominating world, I definitely had to fight to get where I am today. And also I had to fight, another thing I have to fight with is because of my age. I definitely came up across that a lot when I was younger than people who go, well, you know, but you're 20. Game of Thrones, I think I was 24 when I came in. You never meet any HODs at 24. And looking back now, it takes the right person. I don't think every 24-year-old can kind of step into those shoes. It takes a certain type. But the fight's interesting. I think, yes, I do have a lot of, definitely lights me up inside, because I want to help make a change. I think I've told you this before. I had no one, there was no females that I looked up to when I was, you know, in my early 20s, in my teenage years. There was nothing around me. I had to create my own path, which in some ways I think is great. But now hitting this point, I want to be able to inspire other women to go, you know what? I can do that too. And I want to be able to be open to have conversations with people to be able to come up to me and ask me questions. I don't want to hide all of this information, because I think, you know, I have come across people in my career that have hidden it and don't want to share it. The only way we're going to move forward is to share information and have conversations and back each other up. You know, if someone, you see something, even if it's my world, something else, pick up the phone and say, yes, I'm behind you all the way. And I think that helps give people, you know, confidence and how you move forward, because, you know, there's some things that I've done and maybe I've done it before. You see something and you go, oh, that's really good. But I don't move on it. And then now you realize that you're like, no, pick up the phone, send an email, reach out. It's really simple. What's it going to take? 30 seconds?
Yeah, that's I think good for anyone who's listening, regardless of their industry. Shifting gears, I want to show you a picture. And the first thing I want you to do is describe the picture for our listeners. Who's in the picture, first of all?
Oh, wow. This is a flashback in time. Okay, so Diana's in the photo. I'm in the photo. Miss Stephanie Roven is in the photo, if anyone knows her.
She's a board member.
She is a board member. She's a woman about town. And my very good friend and great sidekick in our company, Rebecca Horan. And it's my first trip to the Cowgirl Museum. Ooh, and I still have that shirt with me now. Oh, nice.
Tell me what you remember about that day.
My God, I didn't know much about it. I mean, obviously, you know, I'd spoken to Steph, I'd spoken to Stacey McDavid, I'd made other trips, but I had no idea really what the Cowgirl Museum was about. I mean, the induction, I mean, it's the closest I think I've ever felt like being like Madonna. I don't think I'm ever going to feel like that again. I was like, wow. No one quite warned me. Actually, who was I speaking to the day? I was speaking to Christina Voris before the induction and I was like, get ready. And I think she was like, why? And I was like, no, you'll never experience anything like this. This is, I don't quite know how to describe it, but I'll see you in 24 hours. You'll get it in 24 hours. It was such a whirlwind, like, trip. I don't think I appreciate, like, I really understood what happened till I was back on the plane. Me and Rebecca still laugh about it now. She was like, I mean, this was crazy and I've never experienced anything like that. I don't think I slept for a few days. But I think, yeah, moving forward, I think it's the same as anything. You don't really appreciate things until it's over, which I'm learning to try and appreciate as I get older, appreciate it in the moment. Sometimes things move too fast though. And I was saying this to someone the other day, sometimes you really have to hold on or just have a moment to sit with it. We move so fast in this modern world. We never stop and we never actually go, you know what? That was an amazing moment. Let's keep this in our memory box. Because I believe that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter about success, whatever you've achieved financially, anything like that. All you're left with it is a box of memories. And I think that memory will be in my box. Mm-hmm. My time capsule, let's call it.
So you've now been here a couple of years. Have there been honorees, or what honorees have you met that you have thought, huh, she's interesting?
I'm thinking now. You put me on the spot. Well, I'm going to have to give a call out to young Lindy Birch. She'll like that, young. Note that, yeah, if you're listening. I think she's an extremely fascinating woman, and especially getting to know her world more and more and being around it. I have a lot of respect for the lady, a lot of respect. And just, you know, back to being in a boys' club and still very much, you know. I've met some younger generation people, again, now in the same sport that she works in, competes in. And I find that quite fascinating because that is, so she's up there. I very much enjoyed, I think this year, I think Miranda Lambert was a brilliant induction. We reached out to each other. I was like, we're definitely the puppies in the club, which is interesting. I think going back to that, you know, I know that I said that to Anna Meta. I was like, you know, I do feel a bit guilty because I'm young, but I do think moving forward, it's the next generation that's going to take it. So if you can have these voices and all different types of ages and different groups and from all over the place, doesn't matter what your background is, that's such a wonderful thing to have in the museum. I think that's kudos to you guys to be able to put that all together. So at the moment, those two are definitely standouts. But I mean, and obviously, you know, the legend that is Stacey McDavid, is an honoree. And she's also, you know, before you inducted me, has become a great friend and a great ally. And someone, interestingly, that I meet, obviously, via the museum, that if I'm in an hour of need, I have reached out to in life. And I've definitely pulled my car over in the middle of the night. And I've gone, who can I call? I really need some life advice. I know. I'm going to call Stacey and David.
Camilla, since you have been here now, since your induction, and we've seen you, I think, almost every year since, and you've been back again now for, I feel like, a month-ish or so. What has brought you back this time?
Interestingly, I was thinking about it on the way on the drive. What is one of the things that the museum have given me in life? Obviously, you gave me... you know, honored me in your Hall of Fame, which is amazing. But what I didn't realize the day, I was going to meet my partner that day, Constance. I wasn't expecting that one to happen. Actually, we didn't even speak that much that day, but that's what really keeps me coming back and forth, that now, you know, I have someone that, you know, lives here and has equally shared their love of this great town/state. And, you know, I think it's really rubbing off on me that I do. There's something, I love how peaceful it is when you go into the countryside. Mm. And I think that's something very special that, you know, for to be able to have that and be able to have access to that.
Interestingly enough, I think she had, Constance Yeagy, had her first exhibition here, I think, when you were inducted, and she's got one here right now, which is called The Devils, which was shot at your place.
Correct. So during lockdown, Constance came up with this great concept to, she pitched it to me if she could do a photography project on my company during our COVID lockdown about The Devil's Horseman, which at that point I was like, this is amazing. This is wonderful. That during lockdown, I learned how to make sourdough bread. Constance managed to create this amazing, beautiful, raw project all about the Devil's Horseman. And you know what I love about it the most? The way that she photographs it and feels it, that's the way I see it through my eyes. And I have made previous projects before, and I equally, you know, they're on the same bar as each other, but it was very different. She captures that true essence of time that happens, and this wonderful relationship you see between human and horse, and how, you know, sometimes the horse will keep you on track in life. It gives you purpose. It gives you this wonderful connections. And if anyone rides horses that's listening, you'll totally get it. You'll understand where I am. So yes, during lockdown, she created that. And of course, she just opened it a month ago, which is, I'm extremely proud of her, of what she's done. I'm excited to see what she's going to do next.
The exhibition is called The Devils, and it will likely be closed when this podcast airs. However, there is a book that contains many of the photographs, and it's, as you say, it's interesting in that she captures this power dynamic, I think is what she calls it, the power shift between horse and human, that I guess goes on all the time when you're doing liberty work.
I think so. And there really is a power shift. You know, if you ride horses, like it's like a dance as well. You know, sometimes you might be the leader, sometimes they're the leader. There's moments when you come together. There's moments when you stand on each other's toes. That is the true relationship between, you know, a rider. I don't know, there's many ways. Rider, trainer, wrangler, loper, groom. Just someone that just gets a horse. We don't think we need to label it. It's just being in that moment and being able to understand that it's such a beautiful relationship and brings out the best, I think, in humans. Mm-hmm. I think I've spoken to many people over the years, and, you know, having animals around you really does bring out the best for us.
Mm-hmm. So in another life, what might you have done or been?
Good question. Well, in another life, how about this life?
Okay.
I think this life might be. I don't think I'm, I think I have a mind that always wants to, I want to do different things. I don't want to ever stay static. I love what I do with The Devil's Horseman, but I know there's going to come times in life when I'm going to want more. I love the idea of being creative. Absolutely adore it. And I think I said this in my speech at the induction. What I love about this industry is we get to tell stories which might influence, which might change someone's path in life. And there is some brilliant films out there which iconically have opened up a door and told me that there is a possibility to be different. So I think overall, I think that I'd like to start, well, I have actually, start writing and become my own creative, because I'm always a person which helps create somebody else's dream. But I think in the next 5 to 6 years, I'm going to want to create my own dreams. Mm-hmm. So in my next life, I'm going to stick with this life, but I'm going to do a lot more. You haven't seen, I don't think I've seen anything yet. I haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg.
What kind of writing do you enjoy doing? Are journaling, or what do you mean?
Script writing. I have a concept that I've been working on, and I like stories which people can relate to. And people can relate to of all generations. And I think the best thing in life is the simple stories. I think people, it's easy to overcomplicate things or kind of put hidden messages within it. I think I'm obsessed with people's relationships, if it be a personal relationship, a friendship, and why people connect and why people disconnect. So I think if you look at most creatives in the world, the best creatives, all of their movies, or sometimes even like they look at writers and things, it's always a very similar narrative that they're attracted to, or the story that they're telling. And I think for me, it's about connections. So that's where I'm heading towards. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be able to tell a story that it's okay. Like, some things work, some things come back together. It's life, it's normal. So yeah, for me, that's what it's about. No violence, no guns, no punching, no car wrecks, just very simple. Something that happens in an everyday household that people see every day. That's what I want to tell in a beautiful, poetic way.
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to end this. Camilla, thank you so much for your time here. We appreciate it, and safe travels back.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Be sure to keep up with the National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame through our social media channels. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.